Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good evening, everybody. It's Sunday night. It's October 4th. That means we're just a few days from the start of the regular season, and this is another episode of the program. I'm your host, Chris Fossil. With me, as always, is Mr. Timothy Rosenthal. Good evening, Timmy.
So it must smell like hockey season. It really does at this point in time.
Yeah, and that's not just because the preseason is finally over. Finally.
For anyone who really cares, Washington beat the Islanders 6-2. And that's all we have for you.
Wait, and the Capitals just scored again. I know. That was bad. By the way, the Islanders did finish 2-6 in the preseason. just to show you how little sometimes the preseason really means. Yeah, the Islanders won a grand total of twice. They lost to the Devils, by the way. Some of the other meaningless things that will go into this episode. Oh, the Devils were 4-0, by the way, in the meaningless part of the excerpt. They were 3-0 on the 3-on-3, and they won one shootout. Yep, I know. The Rangers actually contributed to, I think it was something like 1/6 of the total games that did not. That ended up going to a shootout. I think it was like 2-12 or 2-13.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, they could not score on three. They could not figure out 3-on-3 at all.
Well, that's why you have the preseason to figure that out, I guess.
And predictably, their fans and media whined about it on Twitter, because if it's something that we can't do, we cry about it, because that's what some fans and media do, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Look. This is how it is. Look, Claude Julien has issues with 3-on-3 as well, as we've seen.
That's a hell of a lot better than the other option. If they have the other option, I'm tell you what, that's going to cost them another playoff game, another playoff season. Trust me.
I tend to agree with you. I think it might any. Well, I think something might cost them anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be the main reason why, but if they have the same amount of games in the shootouts they did last year, where they went 4-10, expect that to be the same mark or even worse with this team.
All right, here's the thing, though, and I want listeners to sort of hone in on this. If your team goes to the shootout 14 times this year, you're just bad at 3-on-3. You're just bad. Or you're Washington and basically go, oh, we got Oshie and Ovechkin. And, yeah, good luck. You're not going to beat us. There are going to be teams that legitimately try to play for the shootout like Washington. I think that may be the one team that comes real close to, say, 14 or 15 shootout, just because they don't care. They figure, you know what? We get into 15 shootouts, we're going to win at least 10 of them. That's their forethought in this. Sure, it'll drive Braden and Holtby to drink, but that's okay. That part doesn't matter.
I think goaltenders would do a lot better in shootouts than 3-on-3, to be honest.
Yeah. It depends. Some goalies are really good at 3-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
They're really just... And yet, there's some that just aren't. I'll tell you right now, the one team I fear for is New Jersey. Unfortunately, the last 2 years, 4-on-4, they've been, actually the last 3 years, they've been in the bottom five when it comes to 4-on-4 goals given up. The last 2 years, they've been in the bottom three. That's not good, Danny. It doesn't bode well, and they're not the only team that has problems when it comes to even strength of the non-5-on-5 kind. So people that are thinking, oh, this is going to be easy, this is going to be this and that, and you're forecasting and predicting things going into the season, just know this. There are three simple adages to live by in the upcoming NHL season, which starts Wednesday. And by the way, if you have center, you know, any most cable system, you get about 3 weeks of center ice for free. Okay. One, I can guarantee no player goes over 100 points this year. I can guarantee.
For the second straight year.
I will not be surprised at all. If someone does, hey, you know what? There had to be a lot of things that happened for it to actually occur.
Yep. Now, here's another question just on top of that. Will anyone top 90 points? Last year, no one did.
Yes. I could tell you right now that I would not I wouldn't be surprised if at least a half dozen players top 90 points.
That would be about the same amount of players who topped 80 last year.
Yep. I would think based on the 3-on-3, you're going to see anywhere from a 6 to 10 point bump up in points.
Yeah, I would think so. At least.
People have to understand that with the 3-on-3, you're basically going to see the same probably six guys rotating in overtime. You're not going to see three lines of players. That's for sure. You're not going to see three lines of three. You're going to see basically the best six players from each team rotating over and over and over again in 30 to 45 second shifts. Maybe occasionally you see a third line, but it's going to be rare.
And the only time you will see a defenseman is if they're of the puck moving variety, like Tory Krug, Mike Green, PK Subban, et cetera, et cetera.
I will say this, though, Timmy. Some teams are going, you're going to see this at some point, and maybe it happens later in the season. There's a team that needs to clinch a playoff spot for a division.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see two defensemen at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt.
I'm waiting to see how that works because you're going to have one mobile defenseman and one stay-at-home guy rotating. And the space on the ice 3-on-3, I hope that slow guy knows what's coming.
Yeah, really.
Again, we've talked about defensive spacing many times on the show, and there's some teams that can't master it 5-on-5. 3-on-3, hey, Edmonton.
Good luck.
How you doing?
Now, under certain other circumstances, though, like a power play, you will see a defenseman on the ice, at least one.
Yes. Right. You see a 4-on-3, you're going to see one, possibly two defensemen. But I do think in most cases, even then, you're going to see three forwards and one defenseman.
Yes.
Pittsburgh, however, might go four forwards.
Yeah, the only defenseman I could really see going on there is Letang. But
you're right. He would be on the first unit, and I think you would see a second unit with four forwards.
Yeah.
Because they could do it. I mean, look, for those that don't know, Sergei Plotnikov made the Penguins. And we'll be playing on the second line with some guy named Evgeny Malkin, which means, Calder Trophy, if he sticks on there. No, not Arthur Panarin from Chicago. No. We're not touching Panarin. No. Botnikoff is where it's at.
I don't know. With the amount of chances that McDavid's going to get on Edmonton and with the amount of focus on him, I still, even if he gets 65 to 70 points, I still don't see how they override McDavid as the Rookie of the Year. That or former BU Terrier.
We'll go there. Don't worry. But no, I think Plotnikov could get nominated at least. He has a shot. I don't think he's going to win it, but he has a shot at least. I think Eichel actually could win the Calder more so than McDavid, only because, well, for one, Eichel can take a hit, And two, we've seen already that, and this is a concern, with Jordan Eberle out, I guess probably another month or so, give or take, they've already said in Edmonton, according to Tom McClellan, that Connor McDavid will take on a more two-way role. And I've heard this before, Timmy, and this has affected guys like Crosby, who probably went down a good 15, 20 points last year because he had to play more defense.
Yeah.
And I do think McDavid's going to have to learn defense on the fly in the NHL as an 18-year-old in the Western Conference against some really tough teams. You don't think L.A. is going to give that kid a trial by fire that you won't believe? You bet you. It's not going to be easy for McDavid. I think, personally, if McDavid was in the East, he'd have an easier time.
Yeah, he probably would, even in a more physical conference.
Yeah, even in a more – but at least the teams are – let's be honest. You look at the East, yeah, you have four or five good teams in the Metro. You have two or three good teams in the Atlantic, and then you have teams you're not sure about. So,
yeah.
Again, it probably would be an easier conference. Look, he would thrive against teams like Pittsburgh who don't really offer much resistance on defense. He'd blow by the Devils. He'd blow by probably even, I don't know about the Hurricanes. They don't allow as many shots as most people think. Well, like last year showed. Philly would be interesting. He would have a lot of success against Philly. You just look up and down the line, and that type of player would have a lot more success in the East. Mm-hmm. I think Connor McDavid, if he plays in the Eastern Conference, has an 80 to 85 point rookie season. Easy. I think that's how much of a difference it makes.
Yeah.
Now, it's true. Yeah, McDavid's going to get to play teams like Dallas, who, despite what we've been told and their acquisition during the free agency period and such, they look kind of the same as they always do in the preseason with some slight improvement. But that sort of thing. I don't know. I think possibly McDavid could top 70 points, but again, does he play all 82 games? I don't know.
He stays healthy, hypothetically. Well, even if he misses a few, like a game or two, I could still see 65 to 70.
Oh, definitely. That's more than reasonable. Let's see. Now, the second thing that we talked about this a few times. Injuries will play a massive role this year, unfortunately. Again, I know. I can hear it already.
Dead horse. I know we are, but
the grumbling from fans suggests that we have to mention this. Sorry. But that blasted injury ninja wreaks more havoc than you can imagine, even in the preseason. I mean, at one point, Timmy, 10 Red Wings players were sick this weekend. I wish I was kidding, but according to Andrew Kahn, he said no fewer than 10 Red Wing players were sick on Friday. 10. I mean, basically, if you want to make a roundabout number on it, half the team.
But flu-like symptoms.
Flu-like symptoms, kids. And if you don't think it's going around everywhere, well, unfortunately, I know quite a few. Like my next door neighbor and his fiance have it.
My mom has it.
Yeah, my fiance had some form of it. I mean, it's
everyone
it's
has it.
Yeah,
at least seemingly.
I mean, we can jokingly say, "Oh, it's just a change in season," but well, it really is. So I went looking through, and like I said. Man games lost to injury.
All right, how does knowing you have two injuries on their page?
Just give it time for it'll refresh. Come one sec.
Oh yeah, there's a lot more than that. Trust me.
Oh yeah, there's a lot more. Okay, some interesting. We're gonna get into some interesting and fun stuff too. Like I said, injuries is key. You know, we went into the opening of the season. I think the third thing, no 100 point players, injuries, and the third and most important thing is this happens every year. One or two teams get off to an insanely hot start, and they ride it almost all the way through. And then conversely, there's that one team that starts off really slow that finds a way somehow to turn it on just the right time. Last year, that was Minnesota. The team that started off on fire was Calgary.
Yeah.
And I think one of the big games last year was a 52-save performance about the third week into the season by Jonas Hiller in Chicago that turned a lot of heads. And that was one that got people, maybe this Calgary team isn't that bad. And, you know, there was a little bit of a lull for Calgary. There was concern they may not make the playoffs. And then that line of Monahan, Hudler, and Gaudreau got hot. And I mean red hot.
Yes.
Just enough to carry them into the playoffs. You know, they got past Vancouver, which... okay, that's not hard, but they got to the second round. They got clubbed around a bit by Anaheim, let's be honest. They got beat up. They just did.
And let's be honest, but Anaheim, if it wasn't for a couple unlucky bounces, would probably have won the cup. They would have gone by Chicago, and I think they would have gone by Tampa.
Oh, I don't doubt that, although the triplets would have given Getzlaff and Perry fits.
Yeah.
Like having three swarming gnats going around you. It's not fun. So you're going to have that. You have the injuries. You have, you know, the team that gets off to a hot start and team that, you know, gets off to a not-so-hot start. There's always one of each that winds up making, you know, just having that magical run every year. There's the stalwarts, obviously. I mean, look, let's be honest. The Rangers are going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to miss the playoffs. You know, you look at the West, obviously Chicago is going to make the playoffs. Nashville, St. Louis, Anaheim's a given. I mean, you know, there's certain teams that are just absolute locks to make the playoffs.
I got Calgary, and that's a lock.
I like the boldness.
Yeah. I'll tell you who else I got in at the lock, even though they missed it last year.
LA is going to just punish people this year.
Yeah.
The only question with LA, and it comes down to this. It's not that Daryl Sutter is listening, but would you let that 70s line play 17 to 18 minutes a night and in all situations? Because I think that's one of the main reasons last year, remember, Tanner Pearson went down to injury and Toffoli developed mononucleosis.
Mm-hmm.
And L.A. went into a 2.5-month tailspin that would kill most teams, and yet they almost wound up making the playoffs. I mean, look, they were in it and then lost a couple games at the end of the season that they probably shouldn't have to ultimately miss. So... this was a team that, despite everything, still had a chance to end up around 97 to 100 points.
Yeah.
How scary is that?
Very.
And they were not good last year, and yet they were 13 above. I think they finished with 95 points? You know, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, last year they 95.
Yeah, I really should try to beat. Nah, who am I kidding?
And again, that's another team that was bit hard by the shootout, 2-8.
Well, again, you know, take LA, 10 shootouts. You figure if they have a few less, and 3-3, you'd have to think that they're pretty good. I mean, you put Toffoli, Carter, and Doughty out there, or even Muzzin, and you got to think they have a pretty good chance of winning in on the 3-on-3 most nights.
Yep.
Because they can control possession, which usually in a 3-on-3 overtime, if you possess the puck enough, you're going to score eventually. We'll let the advanced stats guys figure more of that out as the season goes on. It's going to be a lot of fun to see the advanced metrics from the 3-on-3. I'm looking forward to this. I can legitimately geek out with this. But, again, that's another team that definitely can make the playoffs. No question about it. I have them as a lock as well. All right, let me do this real quick. Cause I have some fun stuff here that I found. Leave it to me. I have a bad sense of humor and, evil disposition when it comes to this. Let's see if this works. Dear computer, you poor thing. By the way, folks, we will be starting a Kickstarter probably in January for a new laptop, because I think I will kill this one by the end of the year. Yeah.
Probably the
best
for all parties.
You know what's funny? I just got this one last year. It works good, don't get me wrong. It's just if you do the math, you figure I write 7 or 8 articles a day, plus answer all sorts of questions. You figure over the course of a 180-day hockey season, that's over 1,000 articles and God knows how many questions, podcasts, and et cetera. It's a lot of fun, don't get me wrong. But, yeah, it's a challenge. Okay, let's see here. Based on the 2014-15 standing, this will be fun. Like I said, folks, this is the general preview of CAS. Okay. Last year, obviously, the locks to me. It was 4-4. It was 4-4 from the East, and not surprisingly, it was 5-3 from the West, because obviously LA missed. Now, you have to think, based on what has gone on during the off season and such, that Tampa Bay and Montreal are still locks from the Atlantic.
Yep.
That's a given. You would like to say that Detroit is probably a lock, but just barely. They're actually improved, which is the funny part, offensively and defensively. The only question is who's going to be their goaltender. Because they're not going to lose 10 games in the shootout again, which is really the only reason why they weren't a lock last year and they had to kind of fight up until the last week of the season. So there's three from the Atlantic. Now, from the Metro, like we said, the Rangers and the Capitals are locked. As a matter of fact, I think they do kind of flip-flop, and Washington winds up winning the division this year, and the Rangers take a step back. I don't know if it's going to be more than one step back, but we'll wait. Metropolitan, after that, it gets really interesting. You'd have to think that Pittsburgh is a lock.
Yeah.
There's no way that Pittsburgh is going to miss... For those that haven't seen the 6-year average on mangameslost.com, they need to. It's insane. And when you consider their metric basically of lost points per player, I think Pittsburgh is something like 30 to 35% above the next highest team. It's beyond substantial. I don't think there's words that can describe how much of an impact that makes. But for quantifiable terms last year, Pittsburgh scored 221 goals. They were among the top three in man games lost. The people that they lost to injury, the impact was at least 35 to 45 goals to me. If Pittsburgh had been relatively healthy, they would have come damn close to leading the Eastern Conference and possibly the NHL in goal scored.
Yep.
By the way, the leader last year was, the Tampa Bay Lightning. With 262 goals, which included a whopping, and this is not a misprint, Tempe,
a whopping 150 goals at home.
Wow.
Yep.
That's nearly 4 goals a game.
Yeah, basically. 41 games, 150 goals. Yeah, a little bit over 3.5 last year. I think it was around that. It was 140. Either way, they were well above 3.25 from what I saw. I think it was like, you know what? It may have been 140. Yeah, it was like the average of 3.27 or 2.8 at home.
Either way, it was a high number. But Pittsburgh, that's how much of an impact. They would have at least come close to 255 to 265 goals for easy. And defensively, they might have allowed a few less goals, let's be honest. But Letang, Mata, et cetera, I mean, like, they missed a lot of players last year, a lot of quality players. Rob Scuderi had to probably play way more than he should have, that sort of thing. When you have players being thrust into roles, it has an effect, and it doesn't end well. You start going down some of these. The Rangers, you know, had a plus 60 differential last year. And arguably, Henrik Lundqvist was not their best goalie. Cam Talbot's gone. They replaced him with Antti Raanta, which, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I
mean, Talbot deserved a starting opportunity elsewhere.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if he deserved being traded to Edmonton, which is the equivalent of hockey defensive Siberia.
Yep.
But, you know, when you start looking at some of the numbers, and we're going to have fun with these. Edmonton was an absolute disaster. It gets ugly. But all that being said, you know, Rangers had a plus 60 differential. That probably regresses back. Washington had a plus 39 differential. That might be about the same. Remember, it looked like Nicholas Backstrom was going to be all systems go for the start of the regular season. And then a few days ago, and no. He's going to miss at least the first 4 games, which to me commonly translates to the 4 dreaded words you never want to hear from a player recovering from major surgery. He had a setback.
Yep.
It won't be reported. You won't hear about it. But you better be damn well that Backstrom had a setback at some point in his recovery. And nobody's going to say a word. What you are going to hear is the possibility that he may miss all of October. So if you're a fantasy owner of Nicholas Backstrom, just keep him chilled. Wait until he comes back 100%. Even if you have to give him a week of playing, I know it's going to be painful, just to see where he's at, and then play him with reckless abandon and enjoy. In the meantime, you'll be happy to know that guys like Evgeny Kuznetsov will love to step into his role and feed Alex Ovechkin meatballs for shots from 25 to 30 feet out on the power play that he can easily bury. Just that. You know, it benefits him. It benefits TJ Oshie. Look, Washington has more than enough weapons. And they have enough goaltending to make this stick. And by the way, yes, they do have the best goaltender in the division. Contrary to what everybody else seems to be saying, and the fantasy people that are somehow drafting Henrik Lundqvist late in the first round. Boy, I don't get it. I never will. But you go up and down these teams, Timmy, and you figure, all right, Washington, Rangers, Pittsburgh. You got to think the Islanders find a way to get it together. Darcel Halak will be healthy at some point this week or next week. So even if he misses a few games and Tomas Greif has to start.
You could count.
Yeah, the Islanders might start a little bit slow, but they'll probably get it going.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it's interesting to look at this division, and it kind of looks like the order from last year might be pretty close to the order this year, except you might flip 1 and 2
the 3, 4, and 5 might actually be the same. We're very close. I mean,
And you could flip though. You could probably put Pittsburgh up in that 3 right now.
You could. Yeah, you could. I mean, look, Columbus will make it a lot more interesting. So Columbus had 89 points last year. They might end up with 96 points this year, and that might be enough to make the playoffs. I think it probably will.
Again, they have to stay healthy.
Crap. Well, Brandon Dubinsky should be ready for the regular season at least. And actually, they are rather healthy going into the season for the first time in over 2 years. So it should be good. You know, Columbus has Bobrovsky. Everybody knows that. Look, Bobrovsky had a very good year under trying circumstances last year, and even he was hurt. So and that basically the end of the year where they went 9-0-1 in their last 10 spoke a lot. And, you know, it may not seemingly mean much, but they were a damn good team on the road, Timmy. All they really have to do is establish some kind of home ice advantage, and they're making the playoffs. That's what it really comes down to. If Columbus finishes 7 or 8 over 500 and they play the same way they do on the road, 8-8 is 16, kids. That's about 98 points. It's more than enough. And it's as simple as that. I mean, we literally can go through these 30 teams in about 45 minutes. And dip through. Obviously, the Saad, Foligno, and Johansson line is going to be lights out. It was in the preseason. I think at one point in 3 games, I think they had 23 points combined. Just crazy. You know, a couple of those are lappers. I mean, they waxed Nashville last night, Saturday night. It wasn't close. So Ryan Johansson is one of the best two-way centers in this league that no one seems to notice except for the hardcore of hockey media and fans. So that'll be interesting. And like I said, after 1 through 5 in the Metro, I mean, look, Philly could be a really good team if Steve Mason can stay healthy and not lose in the shootout.
Or Philly can actually decrease the amount of shots he faces on a nightly basis. I mean, it's strange because the more shots Mason sees, the better he usually is. But
that's the thing.
At the same time, they still have to minimize their shots. It's like,
here's my problem with it. 30 or more shots last year. Steve Mason had a .929 save percentage, Timmy.
Yeah.
30 or less, .920. Doesn't sound like a lot, but he was actually a better goalie with a worse record facing 30-plus shots. You know, Philly overall was 10-20-11 on the road. 11. Notice that third number, 11. No other team other than a team that we will mention from the West that was a disaster on defense had a third number of 11. Let's just say that that's rather bad. I mean,
very.
Let's be honest. It's a frightening number. I mean, like Philly was 33-31-18 last year. 18. Ow.
18.
18.
Let's just let that sink in for a minute. 18 OTs.
So if you're wondering why Philly is basically only 8 points.
The wins they had, though, 30 of them were deciding regulation or overtime.
Right. So, I mean, naturally, you know, they didn't have – they weren't good in
the shootout. 11 of those 18 overtime decisions were decided in a shootout.
That's going to be kind of going – not the way of the dodo, but you figure that would be cut in half. You would think that – say, all right, instead of 14 games going to the shootout, Timmy, you probably see 6 to 8 go to a shootout at worst. You have to think
it's going to be ideal.
You would have to think that shootouts across the board are going to be cut in just about half, if not more. But here's the other thing, too. Philly had an insane problem giving up goals late in games. You know, giving up 234 goals is not great, but it's not bad either, necessarily, in this day and age. Your team, I mean, you're not going to make the playoffs with that number in most cases. Anaheim was one of the few teams that was kind of close. They gave up, ironically, Anaheim, Timmy, gave up 226. For perspective, the next team that was right there with them was the Islanders, who gave up 230. So, I mean, it's possible, but the difference is, then again, the Islanders scored half a goal a game more than Philly.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they were in the playoffs. I mean, I don't, you know, the Flyers were not. And I kind of think that's more of the same this year. Philly might get that minus 19 shaved down a little bit, but if they're still minus 8 or minus 10, they might get a few points in the standings, but they're not going to make the playoffs.
They could make it interesting up until the last month of the season, but really.
Mm-hmm. Their schedule's not fun at the end. It really isn't. Don't, if you're a Flyer fan, just you look at March and April and just let me get the blinders on. And they do face some teams that will give them a lot of trouble, even the Buffaloes and the Winnipegs of the world. Especially Winnipeg. Winnipeg drives Philly crazy. And so does the Vander King from Buffalo. So that'll be fun.
And then they have a four-game road trip where they start in New York. Then they go Columbus, Colorado, and Phoenix. Go figure that one out.
That's an odd one. Yeah, there's some odd scheduling quirks in this year that people are just going to scratch their heads. I mean, look, the Devils play, what, 12:30 on Halloween? I think it's a 12:30 pregame on Halloween. But, you know, you go through, you look at Carolina. Carolina is another wacky team. Carolina is a very good team. Unfortunately, cannot score. And I do think they're going to score more goals this year, but unfortunately, in the words from Ron Francis said it all, Cam Ward is still our starter. And immediately I hit my, I just the hand to me. Reflect the palm reflexively straight to the forehead and went, wait. But I would not be surprised to see Bill Peters almost split the starts at times between Lack and Ward. I cannot see Cam Ward just magically turning it around anymore.
No.
Too many years of facing too many high danger opportunities. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, he is a very good goalie who just, you know, for as many incredible saves as he makes, just makes some boneheaded plays in the net that you scratch your head and go, how is this guy even an NHL goalie?
And at 31, he's not getting any younger, and he's regressing. And some of it's not even his fault.
No, it's just the lay of the land. I mean, you know, Carolina is improving defensively bit by bit. I mean, look, they were 12th in the league in shots allowed last year. Not bad. They didn't face a lot of shots, Timmy.
Yeah.
At one point, they were in the top 7 or 8 for quite a while. And I think they're actually, their shot differential was 3rd in the league, Timmy. 3rd. So if they can just put a few more pucks in the net, maybe they finish 6th in the Metro, for all we know. They're going to make some kind of jump upward. I just don't know how much. Is it going to be 4 to 6 points, or is it going to be 8 to 10 points? I don't know. Basically, 4 to 6 points would still guarantee them finishing 7th. Let's see. You know what? No, six to ten points would guarantee 7th. 10 to 14 points would guarantee possibly 6th, depending. You know, if it's on the high end, it might be enough for 6th. It might not be. It would be close. But I still haven't fought at 7th. New Jersey is New Jersey. If you have to sign Lee Stempniak to a tryout and then sign him because you don't have right wingers, yeah, you've got problems, and you've got lots of them. I mean, simply with New Jersey, it comes down to how many points can Corey Schneider steal for this team? Because he stole about 15 last year. For perspective, folks, basically, if Corey Schneider was not there, the Devils would have had 62 points. 62 or 63 points, depending. If you went 62, you figure that's 8 less wins. They're basically on par with the Edmonton Oilers, and quite possibly could have won the number one draft pick last year.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty sober. New Jersey still can't score. They actually may have even more problems scoring because their power play was worse during the preseason. And I understand, you know, there's AHL players and OHL players and junior players mixed in. But if you were to take the preseason numbers and somehow extrapolate them magically into your spreadsheet, Excel 2016 spreadsheets, Devils possibly would score as many as 8 to 10 power play goals less than they did last year. And they only scored 41. Granted, they only had 212 power play chances, which was lowest in the league, and was over 80 power play chances less than the highest team, which is bad. If you have one power play chance a game less than the top team, that's a bad sign. It's a really awful sign. And New Jersey has a tough time drawing penalties. They're going to this year. I can't see why they wouldn't. They weren't a bad home team last year. They started out awful at home, but actually wound up being, over the second half, one of the better ones, oddly enough. And yet, it doesn't really matter because they're going to give up more goals with this puck support system that new coach John Hunt has brought in. Ray Shero has tried his best to piece together a team that can somewhat compete. But it would not take much for it to spiral out of control. And there's quite a few teams that could happen to as well, i.e. Toronto. Timmy, by the way, I think Toronto finishes dead last in the Atlantic.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, the three O's in Toronto mean oh.
Yes.
It really does.
They will be tanking for Matthews.
I think
don't
at first
think they are going to get the first pick, however.
I think you're absolutely right. It'll be fun.
Yeah, new coach, and eventually he's going to turn this thing around.
Eventually.
First real rebuilding project he's ever been a part of.
Yeah, by the way, Toronto last year won a grand total of 8 games on the road. 8. That, Timmy?
That is one less
than Buffalo and Edmonton.
Yes, 8.
8. Folks, it's not a misprint. And as a matter of fact, I think it was after January 1st, they only won 2 or 3 games on the road.
Yeah.
Look, they were hideous on the road. And they lost in a variety of ways last year that you just couldn't draw this up. I mean, they were a playoff team on Thanksgiving. And they hit a precipitous cliff that you cannot even see coming.
Yes.
You could.
Just to show you where they were last Thanksgiving.
I think it was around Thanksgiving.
Thankfully we can go back to this to the NHL standings calendar and revisit where they were at this point last year. They were 12-8-3, 27 points, holding 1 of 2 wild card spots with, ironically enough, the Bruins.
Wow, that changed.
Funny looking at some of the standings at this point of the season last year. Washington, 24 points. Ottawa had 24.
Yeah.
Columbus was all the way dead last at 14.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they were so far buried in injuries. Mm-hmm. Huh. I mean, right. I mean, my God, it's a scary number.
Vancouver was leading the Pacific Division at this point last year. Go figure.
Yeah. And again, they start. Well, the year before they had started off really well, and then just went. I think people forget that when Tortorella coached them, but they actually got off to a really good start. And then the Sedins went into whiny Swedish fetal mode, and it ended badly for Tortorella. Yeah, and that locker room confrontation thing with Bob Hartley and company. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at this. That means basically over, 12-8-3, so 23 games. So over basically the last 59, 60 games, Toronto was 18 under 500.
That's bad.
Jeez.
It's
it's not quite Buffalo bad. Because Buffalo did have a bit of a spike not too long after that. And they were like around 4 or 5 under 500, and then they just fell off. But man, that's nasty. And the road numbers alone are even uglier, but it's not going to be much better this year. You know, Phil Kessel's gone. Jonathan Bernier hasn't looked real good in the preseason. James Reimer's actually looked better than Bernier in this system. So Bernier's going in as the starter. I don't think Toronto is particularly fond of him at this point, or the new regime, so to speak, of the triumvirate of Lamoriello, Shanahan, and Babcock. And if you want to be technical, the square because of Kyle Dubas, but Toronto's going to be really nasty and bad and ugly. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nazem Kadri goes bye-bye at some point.
Much to Don Cherry's dislike, if that's the case.
I could see him definitely going. I don't know for who. I don't know if he would go to New Jersey. He's going. He has a definite possibility of going somewhere if it doesn't work out in Toronto at the trade deadline. Toronto's not going to mess around. They have to make moves at the deadline.
Yeah.
And they have the room, too. Remember, when they made that crazy 5-for-1.5 trade to get their standard playing contracts down at a comfortable level. So they were up at 49. They slid back. This allows them to get prospects as necessary and unload players even more if they have to. You know, and it allows them to get some NHL-ready talent if they need to, you know, just to finish out the season. Not so bad.
Some of these contracts they have are just really going to tie them up for a few years. Lupo, 5.25.
He can be moved.
Someone would be, I don't know,
Someone would take him.
It's on a couple years. He has a couple more years left after this.
Send him to Arizona. It's a perfect party place.
Would he waive his no trade clause for that? Maybe.
He might. Vegas is close enough.
Grabner at $3 million. I know they just trade for him. I can see them shipping him eventually. Come deadline time, he'd be the perfect. He would get a good return, and his salary isn't that bad at $3 million.
Yeah. So there's definitely possibility.
Then defense, you just might want to cover your eyes. Stephane Robidas, 38 years old, no trade clause, still making $3 million at 38.
I guarantee he's buried.
Yeah,
he's
somehow
buried. They save the $900,000, and then they eventually trade him somewhere when they can.
And then somehow get Dion Phaneuf off the books.
That's a little tougher. I think actually Phaneuf in the right situation is he's still overpaid a little bit, but he's a good defenseman.
Toronto would have to take salary for him to.
Oh yeah, they'd have to take $2-3 million. There's no question about it. I think that was one of the major balking points when Toronto and Detroit were talking trade. I think Detroit was willing to say, hey, you know, if you take $2 million on, you know, we'll do it. And then it kind of just fell apart. Now
hey,
I think Toronto
thinking
would be
how much
to do
for
it.
Phil Kessel in the next few years? 1.2?
Yeah, we'll be paying a little bit of money. A little bit of doubt.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that. But no, you're right. I can't believe that they agreed to that deal. I still think they could have done a lot better for Kessel. I do.
Yeah. Who did they get in return? I'm trying to remember.
Not much. Really, to be honest, they didn't get much. It's really all you need to know is they finally unloaded Kessel. They got basically draft picks and not much help. You know, they got a couple semi-ready players, and one of them they already let go. So, I mean, it's just one of, it's funny to look at their total salary, Timmy. Their total salary is $82.6 million, by the way.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, people think we're joking here. But their total cap hit is only 70.6. Yeah. I mean, their cap hit is much less. It's 70.7. But they only have $700,000 in cap space with that roster.
A little less than that, too.
Yeah, it's a little less technically, but.
Yeah, I mean.
But here's the thing. Next year they have 11 draft picks.
You got to move some players.
So they have they have flexibility technically. If they really, really push it. But the problem is, again, a lot. I mean, you know, again, Kessel, $1.2 million for the next, I think 5 years. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's spreads out. It's 5 years.
Yeah, next 5 years.
Wow. You know, here's another one. That, you know, you forget that they had to buy out Tim Gleason.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was 3 years. The 3 years left it. About an average of $1.5 million. I think it comes out just about the 4.5. Ow. I mean, this year you're looking at $3.2 million in salary, retained salary, and buyouts alone. And then they have a whole bunch of prospects that they can't play because they have all these other guys in. And that adds quite a bit of money. They have a lot of guys on one-year deals or on the last year of the deals as well. You know, you look. You know, we're going way too far into Toronto, but let's just say there are 9 guys on the last year of their deal. 9, and 4 defensemen. Oh, and 1 backup goalie.
How many of those will they be saying goodbye to?
Quite a few. quite a few, Timmy. I wouldn't have a doubt it's at least a half dozen of them are gone, just from the forward.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. And it's straight up wacky in Toronto. And
how they can afford to call guys up?
Well, they can.
I mean,
it's
yeah,
just,
but they have to be very careful with that.
You have to send one guy down and bring one guy up.
Yeah.
Or injury.
Yeah. They're going to have to retain, put a lot of people on IR if that's the case.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if one of their higher salary guys gets injured, I mean, here's the thing, too, and the thing that people may not realize. Nathan Horton will be LTIR'd at this point.
Yep. So you get a little bit of flexibility there.
A little bit. I think they can still LTIR him.
Yeah.
I need to remember that. By the way, they cannot move Horton's contract for the next 2 years unless...
2020, last year.
Yeah, the next 2 years they can't move him, and he has a no-trade clause for the final hint more than that. Yeah, it's ugly. Don't look at it. It's that bad. But that's the thing.
Here's an interesting thing. James Van Riemsdyk at 4.25. This year he has a no-trade clause. He doesn't have a no-trade clause. Next 2 years, he does. Unless they're missing that no-trade clause icon on general manager next to 2015-2016. But
I would tend to think so. Yeah, that's just a oops.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
if he doesn't have a no-trade clause this year, there's someone you can get for return on the market.
Yeah, remember, no trade clause just means you have to ask him for permission. Somebody might take him on. Possible. But again, that's the thing. You go through a lot of these teams and you see the same thing. I know people are angry because I still think that Braden Holtby is going to wind up having a better season than Henrik Lundqvist. And the reason being is, let's see. Holtby's probably going to start about 7 to 10 more games than Lundqvist does. They're going to rest Lundqvist no matter what. If Lundqvist sees more than 64 games, I'll be shocked.
Yep.
Because they realize that he cannot play that much anymore. He's 34, folks. He's 34 and he's played a lot of hockey in the last 5 or 6 years. And you think about it. The Rangers have been to, let's see. They've been to a Stanley Cup final and two finals in the last, no, I'm sorry. They've been to a Stanley Cup final and conference final, two conference finals in the last 4 years. Okay. And folks don't realize they played a lot of hockey to get there. I mean, look, when they advanced to the finals to play LA, all those 7-game series, it was grueling. I mean, even the Montreal series that they won in six, they barely won in six. People forget they won game 6 1-0 on a fluky Dominic Moore goal. It's a lot. When basically a guy has to be their best player night in and night out like he does. And I guess Carey Price will find that out eventually too, Timmy, but he's a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big difference between playing at 34 and playing in your late 20s. And right now, Holtby's in his mid-20s. I mean, Braden Holtby is straight in the prime of his career, and he's working with Mitch Korn, who is one of the best goaltending coaches in the NHL in the world, period. I don't think it's a fluke that, he was among the league leaders in save percentage. Well, not, among the division leaders. I mean, is Steve Mason going to have a 928 save percentage again this year? Probably not. But he might be damn good. In that sense, he might be around 919 or 920.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair. No. I mean, all right. Here it is, and here's where the debate gets very contentious fast. Medieval goaltending save percentages. and even adjusted save percentage, which we'll eventually get into as well. But last year, Lundqvist wasn't even on this list. There you go. Leading save percentage players from the leading goalies as far as save percentage last year from the Metropolitan Division. Steve Mason. Cam Talbot. Corey Schneider. Hey, gets better. Braden Holtby.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for it. I'm still waiting to hear Lundqvist's name. Okay. And then Henrik Lundqvist. Marc-Andre Fleury was not too far off with a 920 either. And Bobrovsky was right behind at almost a 919.
They had 10 shutouts.
Right. Now, to be fair,
go figure.
Lundqvist was injured for 35 games. We're close, 34.
Mm-hmm.
But Lundqvist gets off to a slow start and then typically has another slow patch, you know, around February and March anyway, which he didn't have to have last year because he was injured. So for people that are arguing, okay, well, he's going to come back better than ever. Yeah, he very well might. I mean, look, he had a shutout per every 9 games played. So if he played 63 games, to me, he'd probably have 2 or 3 more shutouts. That's fair. But are the Rangers as good as they were last year? No, probably not.
That does remain to be seen, but... Did we lose you, Chris? I think.
No, really, I didn't do it, folks. It was not the gremlins this time. Keyword this time.
Folks, we apologize for the technical difficulties, but we do need to keep in mind that we're on a new system, a new platform, and we'll definitely have our kinks that we have to work out.
Yeah, those things, but... All right, getting back to the fun in this. By the way, Timmy, there were 16 goalies last year that had a 920 save percentage or greater.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember for quite a few years where it was maybe 2, 3, 4. I really can. I can go back that far. But, you know, if you look back, and realistically, people think about this. Okay. Last year, there were 1, 2, 3. Wow. Amongst the top 20 goalies, I mean, there were only 3 goalies that played 70 or more games. You know one, personally.
Yep.
Tuukka Rask.
Yep.
Part of the reason why
Boston did not make the playoffs. We'll probably play 70 games again this year. Good luck.
Well, I don't know. We'll see what Gus Fitzman can do. I can see if he could get 15 to 20 starts like he did in Detroit a couple years ago, they should be okay.
I know. It's just that you mentioned Monster and instantly panic too. He is doing a nice tour of the Atlantic Division, though.
Toronto, yeah.
Detroit, Boston. Maybe Ottawa.
Three down, five more to go.
Yeah, he's really working out. But, again, I know people are going to disagree. I expect it. I do think guys like Bishop can bounce back, et cetera. But, as far as the Metro Division itself, Henrik Lundqvist stays as the number one goalie in the Metro Division. While they're not numbered, they're definitely in jeopardy. I mean, how could they not be? You fully expect the Rangers not to get off to a fast start, or if they do, they're going to slump at some point in November. It almost happens every year with the Rangers. They either have a really bad October or a really bad November. And yet, they're actually one of the healthiest teams in the last 10 years. In the league. So.
Strange but true.
It's. And I mean, I'm looking at some of these and just. It's tough. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of these numbers that I cannot see happening. The other thing, other wrinkle that's obviously going to play havoc with save percentages too, Timmy, is the 3-on-3. There'll be a new advanced metric for that too, which is just going to drive people nuts. I could do that. Oh, there's the 5-on-5. There's the 4-on-4. Oh, no, you have the choice of the 3-on-3. All right. Here's something fun. Highest shootout save percentage last year was by Carey Price to me, with a minimum of 20 shots faced. He had an 818 save percentage in the shootout. You're going to laugh at this, Timmy. Guess who had a higher save percentage in the shootout than Carey Price?
What, more than 20 shots?
He didn't have quite 20, but he faced 17. That's kind of close enough. But no, there is one that did have that was better, and this is insane. There is one guy that faced 20 or more, and you're not going to believe who. And he's now, I believe he's now backing up at Jonathan Quick in L.A.
Jonas Enroth.
Yes. Folks, Jonas Enroth was a shootout mastermind last year, stopping 23 of 24 shots. Folks, that's
there
a
was ever a need for
percentage. A team
to sign a goaltender specialist in the shootout, that's Jonas Enroth, apparently.
I wish I was kidding, but he does have pretty good numbers in the shootout, and I'm not surprised. I mean, he was one of the best Swedish goalies, period, before he came over, so. It's a weird number. Look, shootouts are a kind of thing where it's fickle. It varies from year to year. There's a lot of variance to it. But for 1 year, I mean, he was just absolutely insane.
So
I mean,
guess who had the worst save percentage?
Oh, I'm sorry. There was one
Come
other
up.
Guy that, had, that was prominent that had better. But
yeah.
Guess
who had the worst?
Bobrovsky had an 889 save percentage. But then again, that was because Columbus was in a lot of shootouts early.
Yeah.
The best one is, here we go. Looking through these,
Roberto Luongo faced 75 shots in the shootout. Now, granted, 20 of those were in one night.
Yeah.
But still.
The never-ending shootout.
Is this thing on? Okay, now, for comic relief, and because people are going to ask, oh, boy. Do I go there, Timmy? Do I go there?
Where do you go?
Jimmy Howard had one of the worst shootout percentages last year. With a
32 shots.
15
More than half of them went in.
And the funny part is, it was worse earlier in the season. I mean, I think at one point he only stopped 8 of 25. It's just really bad.
Wow. I think we're having gremlins again.
No, we're good. We're good. We're
Are we sure about that?
We're hoping. We are definitely hoping. But like I said, the key with this year is, and people are just going to have to be patient early on. I mean, they really are, especially in fantasy hockey league. There's so many things that are going on all over the place. For example, if you just took a look at the preseason numbers, you would be anointing the Detroit Red Wings as your Stanley Cup champion. Oh, and Edmonton would be in the finals as well.
They should play a preseason Stanley Cup game right now, then.
Absolutely.
Do it on NHL 16.
They should. By the way, Detroit outscored its opponents 39-18 in the preseason. I do think that has some bearing, and I wouldn't be surprised if Detroit does get off to a bit of a fast start. I think they do, actually. They almost have to. They did last year, and it served them well, so... And Pittsburgh's kind of in the same type of boat. They have to get off to a fast start. Edmonton has to find a way to get off. There's a lot of teams that have to get off to real fast start. Minnesota's another one, too.
Bruins, same thing.
Yeah, these are the type of teams that must. You know, the St. Louis's, the Nashville's, and the Chicago's of the world don't necessarily have to. They have enough team depth that they can catch up and pass teams with no problem, as they showed last year. Dallas is another one. Dallas has to get off quickly. Dallas has to show they can stop us. We show with Kiddick. Remember, Dallas was second in the league in goals for. Unfortunately, they were one of the worst at goals against. 260. Again, I digress. Some of the other things, teams below the two-goal Mendoza line, there was only one last year. It was Buffalo, and Buffalo almost pulled it off. They caught up at the end. But they came up just short at 161, which is about 1.96 goals a game. They were close, though. They were averaging almost 2.5 goals a game over the final 3 or 4 weeks of the season, but they were getting there. They were getting better.
But just didn't get there.
And I do think they'll be much improved scoring goals this year. I think they'll actually be up around 190 or so, maybe even 200. Look, Jack Eichel is going to make a huge difference on that team. I'm gonna have fun with that. I've said.
Mm-hmm. Toronto at 211 last year.
That's going to slide back a little bit.
Under 200?
Damn close. I remember seeing a prop bet that Toronto's over-under was like 197. So
yep.
I'm not shocked.
Interesting.
Timmy, I figured, you know, with about, you know, because we're doing this a little bit extended, about 10 minutes of actual showtime, and then 5 minutes, and then wrap.
Okay.
I do have interesting NHL season props, though. Prop bet time. These are fun. And these are low, too. There's some extremely reasonable prop bets. And thanks to Bodog for these. See, I can do this on the show and not get in trouble for it, unlike other places. A few of these are shocking. When this, ever this decides, I'm eventually perhaps thinking about loading. But wow. Just the Corey Perry one over under 66.5 points.
What site are you on?
Bodog.eu. Oh, there it goes. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time for it to load every so often when you go through all of them, because it's, you know, it's a lot of players. Typically, they take about two or three players from each team, and they go through them. All right. There's obviously a few interesting ones. Timmy, for you, Patrice, Brad Marchand is projected to get 50 points, according to Bobo. I'm going the over there. I'll take the over on that. I'll take the 43.5 with the over on Oliver Ekman-Larsson, because I would love to see him get traded and throw this thing completely off. Because if he gets traded to anybody that's halfway decently good, over those final 15 to 20 games, Timmy, he might get 15 points. All right, Eichel's over-under is 56.5.
I gotta take the over on that.
I'm gonna take the over. I think he comes darn close to McDavid. There's some low numbers. Like Yuri Hudler, they think he's gonna drop 20 points from last year, or 20 points lower than ESPN's projection. I'm sorry, ESPN had him projected, I think, at 80 points, 80 or 81.
Really?
And the prop suggests 60.5. That's tough. I mean, some of these are just low. Dougie Hamilton and only 40.5.
That is very low.
Timmy.
Very.
Some of these, I mean, are just like easy bets. Wow. I mean, holy crap. Did Bodog think about this?
Jonathan Toews at 66.5.
I'm about to write an article on this.
Yeah. Like, so Brandon Saad, 54.5. That's
way too low. Holy God. I mean, Johansson at 72.5 might be fair.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a little high, but
goes over that.
Far off.
Yeah. The Sagan one's fair.
88.5, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they're assuming he's only going to play 75 games, that's pretty much on the money.
McDavid at 69.5. Is that too much?
Oh, I'm so tempted to take the under. I take the under. I think he hits like 68 or 69. I wish I was kidding. It's real. That one they definitely nailed. That one is right on the money.
Yeah.
You know, based on projections, I mean, he's right around 70, so that's fair. I wonder. Wait a minute. They took Eberle off the board, Timmy. So he's out.
Mm-hmm.
Jágr, 49.5. That's close. Most projections have him right there. They have him right between 48 and 52 points.
Okay. Drew Doughty, 42.5.
Over.
Yes. Easy.
Wow, these are interesting. Yeah, some of these are really fun.
Thomas Vanek, 55.5. Really? Under.
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 Okay. Even I'm not this demented. Zach Parise, 60.5. Wow.
Yeah.
And while he's not going to score while he's probably not going to score 75 points because of games played, he's going to get 70, you would think, or darn close. But yeah,
even on Minnesota.
True. Here's the weird, wacky part, though. ESPN and Yahoo both had him in the low 60s in points through their projections.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder, it at least makes you wonder a little bit. I mean, some of these are odd numbers, but man, there's some. I mean, I'll take the Kyle Palmieri 37.5 over all day. Because pretty much like Henrik, he's going to be somewhere near 50 points. So that's somebody has to score in New Jersey.
Oh, the Rangers ones are pretty interesting.
Yeah, the Ranger ones are intriguing. Broussard's close. Stefan probably could go over.
Nash
that low?
Over 60, yeah.
Yeah, I think Nash will get the 65 or 70 points. That's minimum.
I'll be Ryan. Yeah. He's going over 53.
Oh, wow. These are,
I think so.
Holy crap.
Carlson, like I said, you know, he'll be right around 66 maybe. So that's
yeah,
good.
That one's good.
Who knows? You
Mark,
can go either
Mark
way.
Mark Stone's not a fluke. I think he'll go over. Mark Stone's
Benajad, only a 45.5. That's it.
I get why, though.
Yeah. How is he even on this list? That's what I'm wondering.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, some players got yanked off probably because they were, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Including Crosby. Okay. Malkin getting fewer points than Kessel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Kessel's going to get a lot of goals, but if he's playing with Malkin or Crosby, they are both going to be over 70 points. And I don't see Kessel as a point-per-game player in Pittsburgh. I've seen him racking up a lot of goals, 40 to 45 for sure, but I see the assist going to the Crosby or Malkin or whoever is opposite him on the wing, other side of the wing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, boy. This is something else. It really is.
Yeah. Steven Stamkos is only at 74.5.
I get that, though.
Yeah.
That I get.
Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
Who knew he'd have that much of a drop-off?
You know why, though? It's because of the triplets. Even the triplets are a little bit low. So if you notice, they only have Tyler Johnson listed.
Okay, Vancouver, they have Bo Hovrat on this.
Oh, well, come on, Timmy. They have to have the prodigal son.
Yeah. And both Sedins, obviously. Yannick Hansen.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Both 32.5 or 30.5, around there.
That makes sense. Yeah, there's some odd. You can tell that there's a lot of Canadian in this list. All right, Washington, just for fun. Here we go, kids. Evgeny Kuznetsov, over under 46.5. Over.
Especially Kuznetsov.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the guy that benefits the most with Backstrom out.
Yeah.
I know
Oshie,
some people are saying...
I would think that would be over.
Oshie's probably going to be in the low 60s. It'll be close.
Yeah.
But I think he'll be in the low 60s at a point. Ladd and Wheeler are both going over. I don't even have to look at that. I just don't.
Yeah.
I'm not even looking. Yeah, but some of the props are real fun. Obviously, who will win the Art Ross as the points leader? Who will win the Calder? By the way, it's basically the Calder, obviously, is McDavid, Eichel, and not even close. But there's the third choice is interesting. Sam Bennett.
Mm-hmm. I actually have him in my top three in the rookie of the year. Right. So.
And for those wondering from Chicago, yes, I want to be fair. Artemi Panarin has shot up to 6.
Yeah.
He wasn't even on this list a week ago. He's now 6. I'm just letting people know as a heads up. You know, like, hey, guy, you know. Plotnikov, come on. He'll be on this list soon enough, I'm sure. throwing it out there. He'll be darn close.
McDavid, Yeah, at this point, you will be betting to lose money if you pick McDavid.
He's pretty close. I mean, when you look at this, yeah, basically, Timmy, a plus 175, you're not making a lot of money. Actually, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. Eww. Read it wrong. Wow. I've not seen that in a long while. I haven't seen that since Crosby.
Yeah.
When Crosby came in, he was like a minus 250. By the way, Ovechkin that the year before was almost dead even. So people didn't even, you know, people thought Ovechkin was the super known quantity. And no, he was. He wasn't on the level of Crosby or obviously McDavid. So, folks, it's been crazy. It's been fun. But we have to say goodbye until next week. We'll have actual hockey games to recap and talk about next week. I promise. We'll be knee-deep in center ice and streams from Hong Kong and Australia and God knows where. It's a damn good time. It's a damn good day for hockey, Timmy. It's a damn good time for hockey.
It really
is. Month or week. But as always, you can download the show on iTunes. We apologize for the mysterious 1 minute and 30 second hiccup that sacked part of the show. Maybe I can find it somewhere and edit it out when it goes to the download portion. But until then, until next week, for Timmy and myself, this is the program saying aloha, and yes, we will have fantasy hockey updates as well. So do not forget to tune in Tuesday night to the Fantasy Hockey X show, where we'll be looking at all sorts of fun prices, and maybe we'll help you win some money playing daily fantasy hockey, and we promise not to have any insider information. Scout's honor. Until then, Timmy, as always, has the last word on the live portion. Take it away.
Aloha.
And maybe eventually this will work, folks.
Yes.
Oh, boy. And we're going to have some laughter, folks. How about, Timmy, the button doesn't work?
Oh, God.
The end the show button doesn't work. The end the recording. Terminate works just fine. Ending doesn't.
Nope.
Well, folks, due to unfortunate circumstances where one red button works and the other one doesn't, we're really just going to say aloha now.
Aloha.